From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Last year, the Coen brothers released a film based on Charles Portis' novel True Grit. The novel had been adapted to film once before, in 1969, the movie that won John Wayne his only competitive Oscar. Many fans of the new film were driven to discover, or rediscover, the original, which was conveniently re-released in a stunning new Blu-ray. That earlier film, directed by Henry Hathaway, does have a great performance from Wayne and a stellar cast of supporting actors, but features a tour de force performance from Kim Darby as 14-year-old Maddie Ross, the girl who hires Rooster Cogburn to find her father's killer. She appears in almost every scene in the film and captures perfectly the character from the novel. Kim Darby was at the time already a veteran in the acting profession, having made featured appearances in just about every notable television series of the 1960s, including The Fugitive, Gunsmoke, Run for Your Life, Ironside, Dr. Kildare, Wagon Train, Mr. Novak, Ben Casey, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Bonanza, Judd for the Defense, and Star Trek. Kim Darby has continued her acting career and has also taught acting. In addition to all that, Kim Darby is my guest this week. Kim Darby, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, aren't you nice? thank you. Thank you for saying all those nice things. And I've forgotten that I did all those shows.
Well, it's really like an encyclopedia of the best television of the 1960s, and you had a featured role in practically every show.
Well, they were different kind of shows back then, you know. And I think True Grit was a different kind of movie. I'm not saying it was a better kind of movie. I think the Coen brothers are very, very gifted and wonderful filmmakers, and they have great taste. And I thought their film was really stunning to look at. And I love Jeff in it and Haley, and I just thought it was a wonderful movie. I do think both movies are different, you know, in different times.
Yeah, the new movie doesn't in any way eclipse the old movie.
No, it doesn't. And
by the time you did that, you'd already done all these television shows. You must have been a really little kid when you started acting professionally. How did you get started?
Well, my parents were dancers, and they divorced when I was two, and custody was given to my dad, and really his parents raised me. And he was on the road dancing, and my grandmother said, "You have to come back here and raise this little girl," which she probably shouldn't have done, but he came back and opened up a dance school, and I started dancing when I was seven, and I didn't like it. It came difficult to me. As I grew up, I didn't have a dancer's body, and I had to do it every day, and I was forced into it, and in school, I was voted the quietest girl in the class, and all the popular girls were in the drama class. And so I asked my grandmother if I could take some acting classes. And my grandparents and my father were gung-ho for me to be in anything that had to do with show business.
Well, do you think part of your success as an actress, not that you weren't a beautiful girl, but your looks were different? You had a more kind of girl next door kind of look. Do you think that helped you?
I know now that it did. And my father always thought I was, he didn't like the way I looked. He wanted to, dye my hair when I was 14 to blonde. I mean, he didn't like it. He just didn't like it.
Did it give you a complex or what?
Oh, yes. And I just, I guess I was, you know, when I went to this school at Desilu Studios, nobody will remember that, but it's Paramount now. The teacher that taught there, it wasn't a school that was connected with Desilu, it was separate. But the teacher who taught there, his name was Tony Barr. And his workshop still continues today.
His book, his famous book, Acting for Camera.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you can get his book, Acting for the Camera, and it's a wonderful book. My grandmother took me there when I was 14, and he said, listen, we really don't take teenagers. My class is adults, and it runs from 8 o'clock at night to 1 in the morning, and I can't be responsible for what you'll hear, and it's just something that doesn't work. And then she could be very assertive, and he said, okay, look, let's just try it for 2 weeks. And the first night I was there, he gave me a pantomime exercise, which is just getting on your feet and doing some actions or daily things you do and not speaking. And so I pretended that I came home from school and put my books down and got a glass of milk and some cookies. And at that age, at 14, I still had the ability to shut off everything and really believe what I was doing. I had the ability to pretend. So he had me do some other things, and I had a lot of access to my emotions.
So would you call yourself a method actress?
No. I just had access to my emotions because I was young.
Uh-huh.
And he thought I was great. And he thought the way I looked was great, and he thought my persona was great, and he ended up telling my grandmother after a month or so, not only do I want to keep her in the class, but she has a great quality. And my grandmother came running home and told my father, he said she has a great quality. And my dad didn't get that, but somebody said I was great. And that really got him to thinking. And he started to leave me alone. And one night an agent came in. It was very, very different than like people paying to have to work in front of a casting director. That's what goes on here now, and I just don't believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in paying for people to watch you work. But anyway, so he just sat in the back row, and he saw me work, and he went up to Tony Barr, and he said, do you think I can talk to the grandmother when she shows up to pick her up? I'd like to send her out. And he said, yeah. He said, the grandmother is, a tough one. And he said, well, go ahead. And so he approached my grandmother, and he said, look, I'd like to send her out on some interviews. But she's, barely 16, and you'll have to go with her. And, well, that just, my grandmother, stepped off the moon. And so the one thing was, though, I'm dyslexic and have learning disabilities. My grandmother would help me if I didn't know a word. So she would help me with the word and help me understand it, but she never, never interfered with what I worked on.
She never gave you a line reading, just helped you with the words.
She never involved herself or asked me questions or anything about what I was doing when I wrote things down. So I went in, the first thing I went in for was Mr. Novak, and I was 16 at the time, and they wanted to hire a girl over 18. It was summertime, so I didn't have to go to school, but they had to let me off the set by 6 o'clock, where they could work somebody else, you know, till 9. But I went in and read this last very lengthy monologue, and it was written really well, and it was the story of a blind girl that falls in love with her high school teacher. And it just hit me, you know, the story just hit me. And I really connected to it. And so they called my agent, they said, you know, she was just magnificent, but, you know, we think it's a fluke. And we'd like to have her back tomorrow and to see if it's a fluke or not. And it wasn't a fluke. And they called and they said, no, it wasn't. We'd like to hire her. So that was my first job. And they left me alone, my father, and let me prepare on my own. And I got that first job, and then I did a lot of TV over at MGM, playing deeply troubled young girls that were pretty lonely and
You had that part. You had that part down.
Yeah.
We're chatting with one of my favorite actresses, the great Kim Darby. Now, I want to talk about some of the great shows that you did, because they're like my favorite shows, and I grew up watching them. You did 2 episodes of The Fugitive. I loved that show.
Yes.
And I thought David Janssen was really a wonderful actor. Did you enjoy working with him?
I loved him, loved him, loved him. I don't think anybody knew how funny he was. He had the greatest sense of humor. I mean, between all those takes, he just had me laugh. He had everybody laughing, the crew, everybody. He has such a dry sense of humor. But, I mean, sometimes you just couldn't get through a take. And he was a wonderful actor. But, I mean, between those takes, oh, I wish they could put them together. I do. I wish that film was available.
It's probably somewhere, isn't it?
It's. I hope it's somewhere.
Yeah. Of course, you did a famous Star Trek. Did you know when you did Star Trek that that was going to be one of the things that would be like a legendary piece of work?
Absolutely not. I had no idea.
Michael J. Pollard was in that with you.
Yes, yes. And I see Michael once in a while. Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea. It was the second one that was done. I didn't understand the science fiction part of it. I was just focused on my relationship with William Shatner. And I guess that's why that was very real to me. So I guess that's why it worked.
You know, I think today people endlessly make fun of Shatner as kind of an over-actor. In fact, I've even seen them use one of your scenes with him as examples. But what did you think of him as an actor?
I liked him as an actor. He was very real to me. You know, he was very real. I mean, I really fell in love with him. And he was wonderful to work with, really wonderful to work with.
You played a 300-year-old teenager, I believe, in the story.
Yeah.
What about the Man from U.N.C.L.E.? Was that fun?
I had so much fun on that. I didn't expect to.
It was a two-parter, if I recall.
It was a four-parter.
Oh.
They released it in Europe as a feature.
Oh, right, right.
And David McCullum was, he was a wonderful man. He was just really wonderful. And some scene I got hurt in, and he was so solicitous of me and caring of me, and he said, if you could have anything you want, you know, because I got hurt, what would you have? And I said, I'd like some apples and cheese, and he brought this big crate of apples and cheese the next day, and he was just a darling, darling man. I wish I could say hello to him today.
Well, I'm sure he listens to my show all the time.
Really?
Maybe.
hello, David.
You know, one of my favorite things that you did, which I think was really far ahead of its time, was your episode of Police Story that you did with Cliff Gorman.
Oh.
You played a wife of a police officer, and you this was long before Hill Street Blues, but, I mean, this show really kind of showed another side of police. Every other police show up until then had been kind of shoot 'em ups or whatever, but this one showed that there was a greater danger at home for police off without their badges on, when they're at home with their families.
Yeah.
But that was a very sensitive performance by you. Any thoughts about that show?
Well, the first thing is that I got to work with Cliff Gorman, and that was a real honor. And he's missed.
Yeah.
And he was a very special actor. You're right, it was ahead of its time. It was very real, you know. That story was very real and way before its time. And I think that relationship was way before its time. And I don't know that everybody got that, you know. But
do you remember what the critical reaction at the time was?
Well, I do remember that it was put as a special show in the TV Guide. You know, they took it like a half a page. And
yeah, a little close-up or whatever they used to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about one more show before we talk about True Grit, and that is Gunsmoke. You did a two-parter on Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
And that must have been a personal show for you.
Yeah, very personal. That also, for today, I don't know, but that was a pretty violent show.
It was.
Those two episodes, and was pretty real. And
I think one of the things that was so surprising about that show is that, and this is Gunsmoke in general, that they didn't always tie it up in a nice little bow in the end. Things were ambiguous or tragic as they might be.
Yeah, they didn't, and it, you know, like, I mean, I'm not comparing it to this, but The Graduate didn't either. You didn't know, you didn't know what was going to happen to them or where they were going, or it wasn't all bouncy, and with that, it was you didn't know anything. You know.
Do you ever have you ever found yourself flipping the TV channels and you find one of your old performances? Do you watch?
I watch anything but True Grit. I don't
really.
I don't watch that. Maybe I'll watch a scene or something, but I've seen it so much that usually I don't.
But do you have good feelings about True Grit?
Well, it was a lot because I just had a baby and I had a pelvic thrombosis and until I got used to Henry Hathaway, it was a little shaky.
Well, what was Henry Hathaway like?
Henry Hathaway I think anyone who first met him, they were a little bowled over because he used to be an old prop guy, and he would always pick one guy out of the crew to really persecute, you know, and throw things at. And I didn't know the things that were going on. I'm being vague because of...
Don't be vague. Come on.
No, I need to be vague because there are people that are still living in... So we got off on the wrong foot, but we became friends and had dinner every night together. And then after the shooting, he sent a car for me, and we had breakfast together for quite a long time until he became ill. And so we had a special relationship, Henry and I.
What about John Wayne? Did you have a good relationship with him?
We did. We had a nice relationship. I think both of us were concentrating on our roles, our separate roles. So, and he was working very hard. We were up 14,000 feet. You know, it wasn't easy. And so we were both working hard, you know.
We're chatting with Kim Darby. You know, that last scene, which is different from the remake of True Grit, that last scene where you're standing in the plot with Duke, I think that's the scene that got him his Oscar, possibly. Any memories about that?
It was the first time I saw snow.
Really? Because you grew up in California.
Yeah. And I remember it being a very happy day for me because I saw the snow, and that was the last day that we were outside on location. And I think Duke was very happy, and I loved doing the scene with him. And it was a glorious day.
Well, there's not a dry eye in the house when we watch it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now, since then, you've done a lot of films and television. I remember you on an X-Files not that long ago.
Not that long ago, no.
Yeah, that was a spooky one.
Yeah.
And you're also an acting teacher.
Yes. I taught at UCLA for about 17, 18 years. Yeah, I'm not teaching right now. I hope to be doing traveling and teaching at different colleges and universities and, you know, helping people understand the craft and finding out if they really want to do this, because, you know, people coming out here and not knowing what they're doing is not a good idea. And it's really traumatizing. It's crazy out here.
The business itself is traumatizing.
The town itself is traumatized.
Los Angeles has traumatized you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was born and raised here, but, I mean, I know where I'm going, but it's hellish. It's really hellish. It's expensive. The traffic is unbearable. And if you want to be an actor, you better know what you're doing. You better know what you're doing.
Well, let me ask you a couple of things about that. You've acted in both film and television, and I'm fascinated by the difference in acting for those two mediums. Like, we were talking about David Janssen earlier, mm-hmm. and he's an actor who was fantastic on TV and had a great success on television, but never really found that same success on the big screen. Is there a difference in acting for television than for the big screen?
Well, both mediums are camera oriented, so it's mostly the difference between stage acting and film acting. There's much more of a listening process in film and television than there is stage. You know, because the camera comes in so close that the audience really gets to watch the actor think, as opposed to being far away. They don't get to really hear or be with the actor when he's thinking.
Have you done a lot of stage acting as well?
Yeah, I've done some out here. But when the kids come out here, they need to know what a good teacher is. They need to know what a safe class is. They need to... it's very tough out here. It is very, very tough. And if you're thinking of coming out here because you have a great look and you think you can get a series and you can be a big star, you need to stay where you are. You need to stay where you are.
Yeah. So what can we see you in now? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm just preparing to go different places. I'm doing a signing in Cherry Hill, you know, signing pictures, and I'm doing a Texas Frightmare weekend in Dallas, where I'll be signing pictures and doing a seminar where I'll be teaching. So,
well, that reminds me of one of your other groundbreaking pictures, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
That's I guess, most of the people will be there because of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. So I'll be doing questions and Q&A there for about 3 or 4 days, and also some teaching there.
Was that a fun picture to work on, or was it spooky?
I didn't think it was spooky, but I enjoyed myself. I guess a lot of people got scared by it. But so I'll be in Cherry Hill in March, and I'll be in Dallas to accept the USA Best Actress Award. And then after that, I'll go to Texas Frightmare Weekend in Dallas.
Well, congratulations on all of that.
Thank you.
Kim Darby, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf. It was really an honor to have you.
It was an honor to be with you. And I hope anybody that's listening will come to Dallas. And I hope I get to see you.
That's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I do hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thank you, Francis. I want to thank my guest, Kim Darby, for being on the show. Thank you so much, Ms. Darby. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.